Cotton School of Ninge fails to impress Ms. Velasquez.
Alex Zuno's bounty runneth over.
If you see Flossie, don't look her in the eye.
If you want a community event, it pays to plan ahead.
Rampage message outrage.
Hot property at the hot property. Get it while it's hot.
Another war?
You cannot be serious!
You're never far from a community event.
The Hutton School of Ninge has had yet another outing this week with a field trip by Commanders Rampage, Infinite Dreamer, Vantiern and Deadmeat GF. Their coursework was to accomplish a series of covert heists, managing to insert contaminants, disrupt production and generally do bad things to factions in the name of proving that they're capable of being super naughty Hutton truckers. And in the process, qualifying for access to Ms. Terra Velasquez, engineer and gatekeeper for further engineers, including the aging but enormously competent Odin Geiger. These six missions required the infiltration of a series of settlements, the disabling of all alarm systems, and then the successful completion of access to industrial equipment, disrupting production on site. With a series of silence weapons, a side order of night vision augmentations to their helmets, and a plan, the Hunt and Heist team scoured mission boards in an anarchic system hunting for suitable targets. With Commander Flossie acting as camera person and spare backpack for hire, just in case anything important was left lying around, the team made their way to the first base. With Commander Vantiern taking up an overwatch position with a silenced plasma rifle on the roof, Deadmeat and Rampage made their way to a nearby terminal with an e-breach kit, working hand in glove to avoid the security. Finding the building containing the security alarms, they discreetly made their way to the door. There were two options. One, covertly scan a passing guard, sneak in, wait till no one was watching and then turn them off. Or two, assassinate someone with the right security clearance, cut into the security control room and do the necessary. Being Hutton truckers, they chose option 3, which involved blasting everything in sight and running like mad before the alarms went off. Inevitable, really, as a routine stop and search on Deadmeat turned up a bounty of galactic proportions, and before the guard could activate the alarm, he needed a bit of sleepy time, courtesy of some silenced weaponry. The first heist went off without a further hitch. Okay, other than one of the commanders being so mesmerised by the data port in the Agri building that despite repeated attempts to punch him out of the way, he needed ejecting from the group and then, after apologies, allowed back into the team. 5 more of these heists all completed successfully. A number of bases liberated of their liberally loot left lying around and not an inconsiderable bounty racked up by the team, and they retired to a nearby station to submit their application to Ms. Velasquez, and hopefully a B- from the examiner. With space being ever so big, and comms taking a long time to traverse the blackness of space, they were more than happy to await their certificates until the next day, which didn't arrive. Contacting the examining authority, they provided proof of their skullduggery, including the sizable bounties on wanted posters, a few backpacks full of loot, and the good word of Commander Flossie that these Hutton truckers had indeed been very naughty indeed. Agent Icaros was soon in touch. A federal dropship with blacked out windows, some dark glasses, and a sharp black suit and tie combo definitely marked the agent as working for the Pilots Federation Crime Division. They investigated the logs and stated that the examination was not allowed to contain any conferring and wasn't in fact a group project, and the task had been intended to be carried out solo. Rather incensed that their perfect PWP antics were a prime example of exactly how the very best heist should be run, and bringing along a collection of 20th and 21st century DVDs, including The Sting, Ocean's 11 and 12, not 13, that one was rubbish, The Italian Job, and its many times sequel, The Imperial Job, Heat, Hudson Hawk, and of course the collected heists of Pinky and the Brain, they petitioned that PWP heists should also be recognised as legitimate. Agent Icaros studied this information from behind their dark glasses, face expressionless, before confirming that these truckers had indeed been suitably naughty and providing a letter of introduction to Ms. Velasquez, stating that, despite appearances to the contrary, filthy truckers make expert safecrackers and robbers and should be allowed in this case to access extended engineering.
Our oft-mentioned friend Alex Zuno, partner in crime prevention with Volcarius, scourge of pirates everywhere and galactic champion at the ladies, excuse me, I've just destroyed your ship, has broken another record. That for the largest single bounty claim and sent Intarius Fusion's hamsters into a spin, and that just because their cages are fitted with little wheels. The helper's bucket just wasn't big enough, you see. After all, who'd ever get more than 2,147,483,648 in a single claim? Who'd have the nerve to hang on to those lovely bounties knowing that at any moment the ship could be destroyed, that all that hard work could go for nothing? Just so that they could create a weekly total at will, solely for the amusement and astonishment of Hutton Orbital Radio's listener. Well, Alex, three shredded wheat for breakfast, Zuno did. As any regular listener will know, Alex Zuno and Volcarius have a methodology that allows them to create any total they require for bounties, and it's documented at env.space/elegance/. Now, banish any thoughts from your disbelieving heads that this is in any way cheating. Oh no, this is hard work, dedication, and a ship engineered and kitted out just so, coupled with great skill, great determination, and a great deal of time. And remember, you can see how it's done at env.space/hunter/. Alex, who was gracious enough to inform us as soon as she'd realised what had happened, and on Tuesday night, Intarius Fusion, working with a specially bred set of nocturnal hamsters, replaced the buckets with brand new, much bigger ones. And the message, there, she'll never overfill these. As for us, we'd never bet against the strength of will and sheer bloody-mindedness that is at the heart of trucker kind. And we can't wait to see what dizzying heights Alex reaches, or indeed, what she intends to do when she has gathered every last credit that the galaxy holds. By Galtwit, perhaps?
It's official. Flossie wasn't a pacifist by choice. We've always thought of Flossie as being a gentle soul, hiding from pirates and Thargoids alike, content to ship modicums of cargo from place to place or transport passengers with a cheery, "Don't forget to tip your driver," at the end of the trip. Also, we know that Flossie uses her empty heart points as a place to store her excess knitting wool and maybe, just a small hip flask to keep out the cold. So imagine our surprise. In a recent interview, the 5 times winner of the "Me? Oh no, I never shoot anything, I haven't got any guns" award, confessed that the only reason she didn't shoot anything in her spaceship is that she's useless at shooting. Flossie admitted, in front of witnesses, that she can't do the flying equivalent of rubbing her tummy and patting her head, which is, of course, steering the ship and shouting "Die, scum!" at the top of your lungs whilst confetti-fying them with tungsten-jacketed death. Whilst we think this is a ruse and that watching an anonymous ship explode at a distance was not enough to satisfy her lust for blood, she needed to see the look on their faces as their vision filled with the red mist. "I am loving the ground combat," she told our reporter, whilst looking over his shoulder, eyeing an innocent scientist that was rumoured to be in possession of a Class 3 ID, quietly unshouldering her rocket launcher and slipping off the safety. "We hear rumours that no settlement is safe anymore, and that you're carrying a power regulator at night at your peril. Base personnel have refused to hang around on street corners any longer to offer missions. And whilst Flossie strides down the central avenue, all that can be heard is the opening of storage lockers and cries of, "Get your own, she's coming!" before the locker doors slam shut, and in the silence, there's just the sound of tumbleweed, the occasional whimper, and the reassuring clack of another rocket round being chambered.
It has come to our attention that unlike my community events diary, the people who run the new shiny one from the Pilots Federation don't like to do anything in a hurry. Any new event can start no sooner than 7 days from now, whatever your own personal now is. Not just on the seventh day hence, but after exactly 7 times 24. That's 168 hours away. If you've got an event that starts early, better make sure you put in the request early, or else your event won't make it onto the calendar. For example, this show starts at 20:30 BST-ish, and therefore the earliest that you could put the start time of a new event would be 20:30 BST next Thursday, or rather a few minutes later than that, given that this time isn't the first news item. Why the need for the delay, you ask? Well, we don't know. Of course, some events, like expeditions to the other end of the galaxy with hundreds of pilots and an interesting schedule, would require a great deal of planning, and you'd hope that a week's notice isn't too much to expect. But pilots like to be spontaneous. What if you wanted to arrange a get-together for this weekend? Of course, I don't have this limitation. As long as I get the info before the show, I'm happy to include it. We suspect that the Pilots Federation are being cautious, giving themselves time to review events before they take place. Otherwise, it's possible that the Wet Wang, Cockermouth and Bell End squadrons might try to sneak onto the calendar, not to mention Sandy Balls, Licky End, Lowerswell or Twat, all of which they claim are named after places on that island that used to be off the coast of France. It's possible, of course, that the person who has to transcribe the details from a request form onto the pretty calendar has run out of the right colour ink, or is trying to check the spelling of the long words. But we suspect that they prefer a quiet life, and reckon that most commanders won't remember to out there requesting time, saving the calendar operatives a job.
Pity poor Rampage. He's not the first person to go a bit red in the face for getting caught having a cucumber in the wrong place, and we're sure he won't be the last. But we're assured that this is not as embarrassing as the famous incident that involved a gerbil, a space vacuum, and a mint McStiffy, with a pilot who wants to remain anonymous. And of course, we'd never reveal his name, just as long as the payments keep coming in. Anyway, Rampage. He sent a plea to the Pilots Federation about the fact that engineer Yarden Bond appeared to have taken offence at something he'd said, or maybe Hanky had started a scurrilous rumour about Rampage's behaviour that had meant she was ghosting him. Suspicious about possible euphemisms in Rampage's message, such as, "I'm hoping you could have a word, please, and ask her to open her doors again. And tell her I promise not to mention my suggestions for engineering the Dominator suit." The terribly nice person at the Pilots Federation, Commander Luna, asked for clarification and became somewhat flustered when Rampage mentioned that he'd also lost access to Odin Geiger. He works behind the counter, ba-dum-tish, and that, and I quote, "I can't screw them," and then sent unsolicited pics to poor Luna. Security forces, including several unfed Momus Box Spaniels, were dispatched to Rampage's dungeon, or ship as he pretends it's called, to apprehend the libertine before he could infect anyone with his wanted ways, or indeed any intimately transmitted diseases that he might be harbouring. As his airlock door was forcibly opened in a direction that the designers never intended, using the big key, the authorities found a nervous Rampage squeaking, "It wasn't me, it wasn't me!" and attempting to show his datapad, which showed that the message should have read, "Blocked" instead of "shag." and blaming his auto cucumber. Apparently, this is a spelling corruption option, not a vegetable that's used in roleplay by greengrocer fetishists. Eventually, after several cups of calming tea that Rampage swore was chamomile and some interestingly flavoured brownies, the authorities departed to leave Rampage looking desperately for some snacks and wondering who'd sneaked the Docker's spell checker onto his phone.
Hutton's Hot Shop, the Hot Property, has in recent days completed a stock take of items that fell off the back of a Type 6 and opened its doors to truckers far and wide in order to give them access to some of the more rare collected materials. With truckers busy on a day-to-day basis, doing everything from assisting the Paladin Consortium in a war, cleaning up the mess in Hutton Systems, exploring, washing their hair, staring into the long, long distance and wondering if Hutton was in that direction, there's little time for finding the latest and hilarious cat videos, or those weapon schematics showing which end of the weapon should be pointed towards the enemy. The Hot Property is being regularly stocked with these, and everything from genetic data, culinary recipes, cocktail recipes, oh, and of course, classic entertainment, and a wealth of rather sordid smear campaigns from the Federation, most of which involve stories about Hudson, rubber sheets, and farm animals, much of which is needed by engineers for a good laugh, and of course, to encourage them to help you. Stock levels are being regularly monitored, and Commander Vantian has published relatively up-to-date lists, as well as buy orders for items that are missing from the stock. Anyone getting caught out taking the lot without making suitable deposits, and we don't mean in Cubicle 3, will be fired out of the nearest airlock, and their comfy lounge privileges removed. There will be regular buy-day setup over the forthcoming weeks, and all items will be placed in the wanted section, and Hun truckers will be encouraged to do the full womble and drop off the things that they just find lying around the place for collection by future wombles, Hun truckers. The Hot Property, if you want it, we have it. Pop by, have a browse, and remember, there's a handy outfitter on the carrier to help you add that little bit of boom to your stick and a little bit more oomph in your personal shield. Current location is in the Ayabulu, and updates will be posted regularly in Hutton's Discord and Galbook pages.
There are some things that are comfortably reassuring. Indicators that all is well and normal in the galaxy. Political strife and skullduggery in the Federation. Hanky and Rampage's hot and cold bromance. And yet another war with Sirius Corporation in Avik. Elsewhere, 5 systems are below 40%, but more on those stories coming up. On the back of 4 wars in 4 weeks and a pirate attack to top it all off last week, we find once again that we're at war with the Sirius Corporation in Avik, leaving it on only 33%. Some folks just don't learn, do they? You know the drill, folks. Today was day 1, so let's get this thing wrapped up quickly and show Li Yongri once again that Avik wants to stay Hutton. For a pleasant change, Barnard's Star isn't our worst performing system, dragging itself up to the heady heights of 36%, the highest it's been for some time. As usual, a third of the system's influence has been tied up in an election that concluded today, and 2 of the factions are suffering outbreaks, so all the influence is on the table, and there's an opportunity for improvement. The 2 Epsilons, Indy and Eridani, are slowly recovering on 38 and 39% respectively. Joining Epsilon Eridani on 39% is Ross 671. Wolf 359, with 2 wars and a bust faction, has managed to drag itself on to 40. The outbreak in our newest system, Wolf 562, was cleared quickly in 3 days, so well done to the truckers that assisted in that. Last week, if you recall, Operation Jump to a Dump expanded us into the Acardia system. Gleefully, we observed that we were losing 2-0 and unfortunately took our eye off the system for a few days. When we looked again, we had an oh bugger moment when noticing that Hutton were 3-2 up. Despite intervention from a number of truckers, it was too little too late and Hutton had won the war 4-3 to stay in the system. At the overachieving end of the Hutton systems table, we have 4 systems above 60% and none over 70. Priorities this week are, if you want to truck something, boost influence in Barnard's Star and in the Epsilons. If you want to shoot something, win the war against Sirius in Avic.
Time now for the only Galactic Events Diary where you hear from people actually taking part. This week it's the Nexus Exploration, Trip Omega, Does the Sun Still Rise in the East in the East, Explore the Core Infernal Expedition, The Lost Souls Expedition 3, and the latest adventure from the Buckyball Races. Links will, as always, be posted in Twitch chat and also in description of the YouTube upload. Commander Caboose has reported that there won't be any news of the beloved fleet carrier, the Gary Hogan, for a few weeks. He's been waiting to hear if he'll be able to move his hotbox assets across to the wonderful world of walking around. But in the absence of any definitive news from the Pilots Federation, he's decided that the Gary Hogan and the no less important but less personally named Legacy of Dawn will have to depart without any internal fitting after all. So he's going to have to continue to use an upturned bucket as his captain's chair. Having made this decision to put timeliness ahead of comfort, he reports that the Gary Hogan hopes to be fuelled and ready for deployment in a few weeks' time if all goes well, and we'll report back as soon as we have any news. It appears that Trip Omega was going through just one of those phases. Commander Radium's feeling extra pleased about what's coming next.
The third phase of Titan Contractor's Trip Omega expedition finally concluded on the 23rd of April. After taking commanders across a fantastic sight-filled journey across approximately 31,000 light-years. Whilst this trip phase has now finished and brought the squadron to the human enclave of Onkalonia, the trip itself does not end there. We're happy to now reveal phases 4 and 5, with phase 4 starting on the 7th of May. In contrast to our initial journey, our last two phases will follow an exploration-focused journey, with our carriers stopping at specific points on the route for 2 days instead of stopping at specific points of interest. Upon concluding Phase 4, we'll reach Sagittarius A star, giving commanders many opportunities to explore uncharted surroundings and make their own discoveries. On the 14th of May, Phase 5 will encompass our return journey, visiting many beautiful nebulas on our way back to the bubble. We're excited to see what our commanders make of this journey so far. For more information, check out our website, join our Discord, and follow us on Twitter at @con_feed. Fly safe!
Commander of the Presence has decided to share the love and put one of the other expedition members under the spotlight. And so Commander the Huntsman has been asked to stand in front of the class and tell us what he's been up to in the Does the Sun Still Rise in the East in the East, Week 7.
My expedition was nearly brought to an end this week due to the hunt for the elusive Concha 2. In the bag and parked atop a huge escarpment, I spied the third perched on the edge of a cliff. I stepped too far and suddenly I was plummeting down the near vertical cliff face. Even with the planet 0.1g, the urgent jumps and boosts from my suit did little except deplete power. Each scramble was met with a greater drop down until I reached the bottom 2k vertically from my SRV. Not a problem, I thought smugly. Recalled my ship, Cap Certa, only to watch as she flew overhead and landed next to my SRV. Okay, plan B. The next 20 minutes were spent skirting the base of the escarpment, looking for a way up. Eventually, I reached a split in the canyon. Left was towards my SRV, right was away, but looked more promising. I gambled and took the right branch. A few minutes later, and the canyon wall showed signs of promise. With my suit power now below 35%, I gritted my teeth and began to climb. And climb. All the time watching my suit power drop. After what seemed like forever, I reached the summit, and there in the far distance, I could make out the tail of my ship. However, my gamble had only half paid off. Yes, I was up, but on the wrong side of the gorge. With no choice, I backed up, ran and jumped, boosting like crazy over the huge drop. I was short and hit the side of the canyon wall, but after a Herculean effort, scrambled up and sprinted to my SRV, reaching it with just 5% suit power. And of course, I still needed that damn third concha.
Surrounded by stars, and it appears much fun. Commander Infernal Moose has news of their exciting adventures.
It's been an absolutely amazing week on the Explore the Core Infernal expedition. Although we have only travelled about 10,000 light years since last week, we've had plenty of action and adventure. Our first stop this week was at the Black in Green tourist installation, a black hole surrounded by green planetary nebula, where we held both stock Viper and unlimited class ship races through the spinning rings of the installation, reminiscent of the training we all received prior to getting our Pilots Federation credentials. The unlimited class races proved to be quite dangerous, with multiple commanders ending their runs in fiery crashes. The expedition next moved to the Great Annihilator system, where we met up with the excellent commanders at the Azura Initiative. The Azura Initiative is a mini-bumble in the blackness of space, with fleet carriers acting as stations as terraforming operations proceed to create habitable spaces for future outposts. We held our first event with them at the Ammonia Lyceum's moon, organized by Commander Richard Fluranes of Azura. The event involved two teams of SRVs, corralling 50 Guardian Orbs into their respective team ships under the green glow of the Ammonia planet above us. Our next event was held the following day at the Duranjat crater on Pamentisk, which also involved Guardian Orbs, but this time on foot. Also, unbeknownst to the organizers, Commander Crotch Roach brought Onion Head to get the party started, some of which ended up on a bonfire, and ended the event by dumping 200 tons of it on the party grounds, only to have it explode shortly thereafter. A great time was held by all, and we appreciate the warm hospitality of the Azura Initiative. Next on the agenda was a visit to the Dryu Awesomes, a simply amazing system which is highly recommended for all explorers to visit. Our expedition astrophysicist, Commander Solandri, had calculated that two moons in this system would collide during our visit, and we were all excited to see this in person. Before this, however, we decided to hold a King of the Mountain PvP event on one of the moons, followed by a geyser jump, which propelled us to a height of about 4 kilometers. Commander Infernal Moose was able to land on Commander Robert Clark's crate at this altitude and take in the views before plummeting to the surface. The main event during our visit was the planetary collision, which involved all sorts of craziness. About an hour before the collision, the expedition carrier was moved into position around one of the moons. During this in-system jump, some of our commanders were able to follow the carrier through the jump wormhole. Once on the other side, it was impossible to dock on the carrier as it moved away at high speed, hurling commanders undocking at the carrier away as well. Commanders attempting to disembark on the carrier fell through the deck of the carrier and watched it float away in an endless loop. Commanders in ships on the deck noticed that their altitude above the surface of the moon was dropping further and further, and that parts of the carrier seemed to be disintegrating. Eventually, the carrier crashed into the surface of the planet. Meanwhile, on the surface of the planet, a team of commanders watched while one moon seemed to swallow the other and was coming rapidly in their direction. Most commanders have no memories of what happened next, but woke up later to a mostly undamaged carrier, and commanders both relieved and confused with more questions than answers. How were we able to survive this disaster? Why was the expedition carrier seemingly all repaired now? Is it safe to travel further on it? We will have another almost 10 days to ponder these questions before we arrive back in the bubble. We will find answers, or more questions, in our remaining journey.
The Lost Souls Expedition 3, organised by the Fatherhood, appears itself to be anything but lost, and are hell-bent on having fun, as Commander Bonquiqui tells us.
The Fatherhood's Lost Souls 3 has settled into a comfortable rhythm. Commanders are floating through space in a loosely defined pack, discovering new Earth-like worlds, hundreds of water worlds, and of course way too many snowballs, all whilst having regularly scheduled hijinks. Like the impromptu game of football that took place at the Guardian Ruins in the Arset Nebula, or the group of SRVs raising their front wheels to the heavens to pay homage to the Sun God. Of course, most shenanigans, such as SRV bowling, end up with at least one rebuy at one of the fleet carriers in system, but once in a while they have more dire consequences, like poor Commander Michael Rhodes, who ended up back in detention 6,000 light years away after falling victim to the planet with the highest gravity recorded in the galaxy so far. Not before taking this gorgeous shot though. Shenanigans aside, business is booming within the convoy. Supply lines have been set up to deliver tritium to the dozens of fleet carriers accompanying the trip, and much-needed modules are being shipped in to those who have decided to try something different, like deep space mining for a change. This week, we're heading to the Blue Oyster Bar Geysers in the Via Maris region. If you feel like joining up, head over to the Fatherhood's website at thefatherhoodwing.space.
Alec Turner's covered in bits of exploded ship at the moment, and Nurse Wyeth is applying that very special salve, though I'm not sure just how he ended up with a burn just there. Anyway, the Wiccan Beware race has concluded, and the winners are Brusky in the regulation class, Shea Blackwood in the unlimited class, and all of the ship manufacturers for the amount of money they've made with all of the rebuys caused by all of the, well, let's just let the following video speak for itself.
Hello, listener. If you were watching the video, at this point, you would be seeing 11 minutes and 49 seconds of ships crashing and exploding, all to the sounds of background music. Since that makes terrible radio, I've edited that out, and we're going to move swiftly on with the rest of Norma Snocker's section.
All of which malarkey means that the Magic 8 Ball Championship at this point, Skir, Shea, Blackwood, Busky, Captain MD and Alec Turner hold the top five positions. Whilst in the unlimited class, it's an entirely different layout, with the leaders being Shea Blackwood, Skir, Captain MD, Busky and Alec Turner. And in case you have short-term memory issues, that is a different order. All except for Alec Turner, of course, who's reliable fifth each time. You can follow the links if you want to join in with one of these events. Or if you've got news of one that we're not covering, then email itookpart@huttonorbital.com and bring us up to speed.